This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and Sirius XM Channel 371.
Your partner on television on Saturdays joins us now from the ATL. Roddy Jones. You all right?
What's up, guys? I'm fantastic. You guys shocked me in the break, trying to fire me up a little bit. I've taken some woosahs. I've calmed down a little bit. Drew is reminding me that the Braves are still in first.
That's true.
So I'm ready to go. Let's go.
Bravos are 2.5 up. 2.5 up. 69% chance to make the playoffs. Mets are hot.
It's our year.
Phillies are hot.
It's our year.
Yeah. It's your year, all right.
Roddy, let's
sounds like a Georgia fan.
Let's start with Pitt.
Oh, see, oh no, now we've gone. We got to stop this. I got to get out of here.
All right, let's start with Pittsburgh because that's who we saw on Saturday. Pros and cons after Game One of Pat Narduzzi headed to Knoxville.
I think from the pro standpoint, you got to look at the defense. You're replacing Patrick Jones and Rashad Weaver. And look, Kalijah Kancey looks every bit the part. Servacier Dennis started at Mike linebacker for him, and he was fantastic in the game as well. And UMass was completely overmatched up front, so we didn't learn a lot about the secondary. But in the opportunities that they had, they looked good as well. That defensive front, though, Kalijah Kancey in particular – Haba Baldonado made some plays. Deslin Alexander didn't even play in the game, but they were still able to create enough pressure to really disturb what UMass had going on. In terms of the, I won't say cons, but needs improvement, I think it's still the run game. You know, they were not able, they didn't really need to, but they were not able to consistently just line up and hand the football off until Vincent Davis got in the game in the second half. You know, you and I were kind of talking over the course of the game. Hey, let's see him run the football. Let's see him go to that. And they started to get there, but they're going to get a big, much bigger test of that this week when they go down to Knoxville. Lucas Kroll, also a check in the positive column, seeing him catch the passes and make some plays.
You and Wes are road tripping to Tally this weekend. Your thoughts about Florida State and their effort? I mean, that was some kind of football game Sunday night.
I loved the effort, Pack, and I'm glad you said that first. Like, this was a team that played really, really hard on Saturday, gave it everything they had, and obviously came up just short. They were not perfect. They still made mistakes. You guys showed the turnover margin numbers. Those two turnovers hurt them during the game. The bad snap at the end of overtime hurt them at the end of the game. So there's still little things that they need to improve on, but their ability to run the football and the impact that Jermaine Johnson had on the other side was really impressive to me, because running the football was something that Florida State was really good at last year. They ended up fifth in the conference in rushing, fourth in yards per carry. So it's not like it's just because they ran the ball a lot. When they ran it, they were good at it. And I think that has a chance to take a step forward this year. Mike Norvell's rushing numbers, if you go back and look when he was at Memphis, were ridiculous. He had a year where Daryl Henderson had almost 2,000 yards, and he had another back that had over 1,000. That's the type of run game that he has had in the past. And I think with Jayshon Corbin, with Lawrence Toafili, with all that stable of backs, I think they've got a really good shot to have one of the best rushing offenses in the conference. So I'm looking forward to see how they respond from a maturity standpoint and a preparedness standpoint this week against an FCS opponent.
So we're going to drift off the quarterback situation and talk about running the ball here. And to that point, I'll say, if they can run the ball effectively, does that not lead you to be more McKenzie Milton geared than Jordan Travis geared?
I don't think that's necessarily the case, because Jordan Travis does help them run the ball much better. You know, a lot of those numbers that I just spouted, Jordan Travis had some like 60, 70 yard runs that helped that yards per carry average last year. And when you have the ability to have a quarterback pulling on the zone read game, it takes their defender out of the play in terms of having to block him. So I don't think that's necessarily the case. What I will say is that McKenzie Milton showed that there's just some magic to him still. And you go back and watch at UCF, and Wes, one of the goals that I've got this week about our game, whether or not we see McKenzie Milton first or later in the game, is to remind people how good this guy was back in 2016, 17, and before he got hurt in 2018. This is a top 10 player in college football, like objectively, in terms of Heisman voting, in terms of numbers. Not only was he extremely talented, not only did he have that sort of gamer mentality, he just has the sort of magic where things go well when he's in the football game. And he hasn't lost that. He came in a big spot. You saw the maturity, the calmness to be able to drive his team down and score a touchdown. Even on that little screen pass where it doesn't go right, he just drifts back, and then eventually shovels it to the running back. That's a play that shows so much, not only maturity, but handle of the game for a guy that hadn't played in 2 years. There's just something about the dude. So no matter who we see, I think they're going to try and run the football. Whether it is McKenzie or Jordan will kind of dictate how that run game looks.
All right, switching gears on you. Syracuse really needed a W. Coming off a lousy 1-10 year, they go on the road, they beat Ohio, take care of business, run the football, defense making some plays. Now they come home. They see an old buddy in Rutgers who just put a 60-something on Temple. The Dome should be rocking. What about the Cuse moving forward? Kind of a momentum game for Dino Babers' club.
A big-time momentum game. And, you know, it's a Northeast rivalry. That Rutgers program is much improved. There's a lot of talk about Rutgers being a bowl team this year. So it's going to be a tough task for Syracuse. They're going to have to throw the ball better than they did a week ago. Now, they didn't necessarily have to because Sean Tucker was so good in the run game. That defense will certainly be tested. But the throwing numbers, 92 yards passing from Tommy DeVito is not going to cut it this week. Not saying that he can't do it. We just have to see it against a stingy Rutgers team. So I look at this defense. The defense got a lot better a year ago. We saw Deuce Chestnut really blossom in week one. Obviously, Garrett Williams is back on the other side. They've got some young experience with Williams having played all last year, Mikel Jones having played a lot, Stephon Thompson having played a lot, Rob Hanna. These are guys that all got experience last year. But this will be their first big test because Rutgers are a really good football team.
Well, and that's the thing here. We've got two teams, Syracuse being one of them. I guess to a degree, NC State the other one, that you feel good about after week one, but you don't know how good yet. I mean, I like the way the Wolfpack looked on both sides of the ball against an American team. Now, I know South Florida's been struggling the last couple of years, but, you know, we've got two games here where if Syracuse beats Rutgers and NC State wins at Starkville, and I'll throw Pitt, Tennessee in there, two-pack, we're going to feel entirely different on Monday morning about those three teams if they come away 3-0.
Well, throw Virginia, Illinois in there as well. Illinois, a team that beat Nebraska week one, they go out and lay an egg in week two. But another Big Ten ACC matchup where Virginia, after Illinois' performance last week, Virginia's expected to win that game. So I know coming off of last weekend, the ACC, you know, it's easy to feel a little down about the performances or at least the wins that you got in those big-time matchups. But this is a week where most of the matchups favor the ACC. So you got to go out and take advantage of those games. You know, you mentioned NC State, Wes, and I think NC State is a little bit further, obviously a little bit further along than Syracuse, and you're able to take more from that game because NC State is kind of building off what we expected. We didn't really know what we were going to get from Syracuse. I think we are impressed, but still cautiously optimistic about it going forward because we haven't seen it consistently. NC State, we've seen that run game be really good. We've seen Bam Knight and Ricky Person be really good in the past. We know what Devin Leary can do. So it was more validation from NC State in week one, which I would expect to continue. I mean, you're going down to Starkville in a game that you really should win. Now, it's a tough environment. I've been there with the Cowbells. It's one of the most annoying things in college football as an opponent. But it creates an environment where you got to stay focused and you got to go out and play. So I am really interested and anxious to see how NC State does this week because I think they should be able to line up and run the ball against Mississippi State as well.
What's more annoying, the Cowbells at Mississippi State or the targeting rule?
I'm going to say the Cowbells just by a hair because sometimes we get the targeting rule right. The targeting is on Monday. Like I'm sure you guys have talked about it, but the targeting's in the game on Monday were situations where – I know by the letter of the law that might be targeting, like the block on, what was it, Tiberius Peterson?
Yeah.
And then the one on the one that Monty Montgomery got on Matt Corral. The thing that we're not talking about on that one is the quarterback on a draw up the middle, sliding late on a middle linebacker. Like, yes. Is it targeting by the letter of the law? Sure. But at what point are we going to start telling these quarterbacks, hey, maybe you shouldn't run straight at the Mike linebacker in the middle of the field and then slide right before he hits you? That's just a bad business decision for a guy who's going to be a first-round pick in Matt Corral. Like, if you're going to go up the middle like that, you typically expect them to go the other way. So the targetings were fairly frustrating by the letter of the law. They are all targeting. But there's some things about them that we're not talking about. Like the guy running down on kickoff team and acting like Peterson's not going to come hit him. You're on kickoff team, head on a swivel, like the guy is coming. So I don't know, man. You got me fired up. The cowbells are annoying, though. Don't get me wrong.
Speaking of bad business decisions, how does a person of your magnitude walk to a game and pass on Ribfest?
I'll tell you why. Here's the thing, Pack. We had to walk about a mile to get to this game.
Build up an appetite.
Yeah, exactly. My partner, Wes, a little frustrated with the parking situation. Me, a little frustrated with the parking situation. The third member of our crew, Larisha Harris, pregnant. And so we're concerned about Larisha just getting her to the stadium as she's making her way down.
Ribfest is going on.
And I'm looking at Wes and I'm like, right, expecting twins. So I'm looking at Wes like, Wes, like, I mean, I can just go grab a plate real quick and nobody would be the wiser. We're going to walk in there and be good. And Wes is like, no, come on, let's go get in the stadium. It's hot out here. And it was hot. We went full jacket. I was about to take the shirt off. I was sweating so much walking to the stadium. So, Pack, I am disappointed. I am as disappointed as you are in myself. You can't pass on Ribfest. You just can't. Never. There's never an excuse for that.
At least she's eating for two. I mean, you got to stop. You got to stop.
Thank you. We should have gotten three plates. Well, and honestly, Larisha was the only one of the crew who was wise and brought food to the truck with her. She was carrying a Cheesecake Factory bag, had her food ready to go. And those 4 o'clock kicks are kind of awkward. It's like too early for dinner, too late for lunch, but you got to eat something. Because by 7 o'clock, you start getting a little hangry if you don't.
Yep. Well said. You know what? That was a turnover. That was a turnover for the A group.
Yeah, it was. Yep. We're minus one in the turnover. Because of Ribfest. And Pat, I was made aware that there was a Soul Food Fest going on two blocks the other way.
Oh,
so
minus two.
We were thinking about hitting Ribfest and Soul Food Fest.
Minus two.
Man, I mean,
that was a whiff.
We dropped the ball on that one.
Yeah,
really
that was
did.
A whiff. That was really a major did. Whiff, no doubt.
Do you want to offer any letter jacket thoughts on Saturday of high noon at Grant Field, the first ever meeting between Kennesaw State and Georgia Tech at this point?
No, sir, I do not. I do not want to offer any thoughts on that. I don't. What I will say, Brian Bohannon, a former Georgia Tech assistant, is going to have that team highly, highly motivated to come into Bobby Dodd Stadium. So for my Georgia Tech Yellow Jackets, just know what you got walking in there. I saw that team all spring. I did their home games for the spring. That's a group that's talented. It is a heavily Georgia-centric group in terms of players from the state who all wanted offers from Georgia Tech. They're going to come out there with a triple option. And I know, you know, all the jokes running around about the last time a triple option team walked into Bobby Dodd Stadium. It was the Citadel year one under Jeff Collins. Come on, like, we can't do this again. Please, please, please take care of Kennesaw State. Please.
No, that we can't beg for that. I mean, that's got to be a W at Georgia Tech. Sorry. I mean, that's got to be a must win. No disrespect. I hate to put must wins on people in week two. That's a must win for Georgia Tech.
You just lost to a MAC team that will probably finish in close to the bottom of their conference. Did not win a game last year. And you have an FCS crew that will probably make the FCS playoffs coming to your place that is fired up to prove you should have offered me when you didn't and I ended up at Kennesaw State. Absolutely, this is a must win. Must. And then you look at the rest of the schedule and like just win the game.
Right.
Just win the game.
Worry about week two. You can't worry about down the road. You're right, Roddy. You're spot on, man. Spot on.
You did well, Jones. You did real well. See you Friday morning.
Did I? I'll see you guys, man. Wes, you just get me fired up again, man.
You'll be all right.
See you, Roddy. Be well.
See you guys.
Talk to you.
I love you guys. See you.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Jackie Sherrill coming up in about 7 minutes. The new AP poll's out. 4 ACC teams are in. League okay. Not bad. Clemson falls to 6. They're outside the top 5 for the first time since Calvin Coolidge.
57 consecutive
that's right.
polls.
Yeah.
The Tigers are in the top 5. And they slipped to 6, and there's actually some people at ESPN talking about they've lost their elite status.
Well,
is that hard to believe?
Yeah.
I got to be honest with you. I'm calling you guys out. What a lame topic in my life.
Virginia Tech 19, Miami 22, Carolina 24, NC State, Boston College, Florida State also received votes. By the way, we could do a half hour on this. There are some people voting in the Associated Press 25 in a poll that really doesn't have any impact on college football, but
irrelevant.
They've been doing it since the late 30s. So if you've been doing it 80-some years, you know, you just kind of keep doing it. There's some people voting in the poll that are voting for teams at the back end of the poll that you can't explain. You cannot explain.
Why are you worried about it?
I'm just saying.
Any impact
that's why,
on anything we do.
And it jades the rest of the people who do pay attention.
Even the folks paying attention. That poll is irrelevant. Yeah.
By the way, 6 straight seasons now, Virginia Tech's been in the top 25 at some point. Like you say.
Great. And what
Hokies,
does that mean? Got to go win this week. That's all I know.
Hokies, Seminoles, Canes, Tigers, household brands we need to be.
Ranked or unranked, you got to go play this week and win.
There you go.
That's all I know.
Ross Taylor, who is the football comms chief at Clemson University, says yesterday on Twitter, today marks the first time that 120 of the 135 players on Clemson's roster have been ranked outside the AP top 5. To date, all 135, including 6th-year guys, have spent their entire careers in the AP top 10. Pretty awesome.
You want some hardware? They could show you what hardware looks like.
Yeah.
With or without the AP poll.
The All-State College Football Playoff Predictor, by the way, still gives the Tigers a 48% chance to make the college football playoff, which is actually better than Georgia.
And what does that mean? And what does that mean?
Nothing at this point.
Okay,
nothing.
Thanks for confirming that.
Pointing that out for you here.
People just lose their minds with all this stuff. Hey, you got to go play this week. You know what? I don't care who you are. You got to go win your games. You know what? You think you ought to be in the playoffs? Here's an idea.
Yeah. Florida State released their depth chart yesterday for the ball game. Jordan Travis and Mackenzie Milton are still listed as an or.
Mike Norvell.
At quarterback.
Cheers. Beautiful. Love that. It's the way you do it.
I can't wait.
That's why I
can't wait till Coach Norvell comes
any
back.
Any broadcasters here coming to Tallahassee? You know what? You'll find out Saturday.
Well, that's
Mr. Durham.
That would be me.
That's right.
Yeah, we're fully prepared for that, by the way. Just so you know, we've already discussed that from a production standpoint.
You know, more importantly, Jacksonville State better be prepared.
Well,
for
John
it.
Gross and the Gamecocks. Tough loss in the opener against UAB. Lost 31-0.
Well, I got news for him. That trend's going to continue Saturday.
Saturday night at Doak Campbell?
I'm just telling you.
I understand.
Packer and Durham. This is the Packer and Durham Podcast.
Packer and Durham. On
yeah.
a Wednesday, the Johnny Majors Classic.
That's right.
Is going to crank up in Knoxville, Tennessee this weekend. And we've got the pleasure of talking to a gentleman who will be front and center, new Johnny, coached with him, lived life with him, and truly great guy. He sends me texts literally every day on the radio show because he's paying attention.
We got to find him something else to listen to.
Well, you know, he gets done cleaning out the chicken house. He's good
stop.
To go this morning. Jackie Sherrill, Coach, good morning. How are we doing?
Doing great. Thank you, Pat. And, you know, I'll do anything for the Packers. So, they email me or call me and say, will you go on the show? And I've always said, for Packard, I'll do anything. Wow. So good morning to you guys.
Same. And, again, I hope everything's great down in the great state of Texas. This is going to be pretty cool, though, this weekend, isn't it? I mean, Johnny Majors, you and Johnny go way, way back. Here's Pitt. Here's Tennessee. You know, what kind of guy was Johnny Majors? Because you had a really, really great relationship with him.
Yes. You asked that. I had the honor, Pack, to play for Coach Bryant. And I worked for Coach Bryant for a year. And then I worked for Coach Broyles. That's where I met Coach Majors. And so you had a little of three. Coach Bryant was a man's man. Everything you would want to be as a man, he was. Large in stature, but very compassionate person, but also very tough. And Coach Broyles was a great businessman, but Coach Majors was probably the best salesman and the best PR guy you could ever have. And when they hired him at Pittsburgh, Pittsburgh had won three games in the previous 3 years. They were 1-10, 1-10, 1-10. And they actually were going to drop football. They were going to try one more time. And if they couldn't get it back, then they were going to drop down to Carnegie Mellon to Class 2A back then. And when they hired Coach, there wasn't any question that he could do the job and sell the University of Pittsburgh. And he did. He let the coaches coach, and he went and sold the program and built a great program at Pittsburgh. And as we know, he went back to Tennessee, and it was, somebody asked me about that, and I said, you know, it's kind of like Coach Bryant said when he left A&M and went back to Alabama. He said, Mama's calling. Hmm. And I've always said to Coach Majors, and I told him, I said, Coach, you're the state of Tennessee. You're a Tennessee treasure. And I tried to talk him not to go back to Pittsburgh the second time, but he was emotionally hurt that he got let go at Tennessee. But make a long story short, I don't think you'll find a player that ever played for Coach that will not tell you, Pack, the same thing, that they respected Coach Majors.
Well, they honored that 76 team last week in Heinz Field, and that was an emotional moment for a lot of people there because that brought Tony Dorsett back. But, Coach, here's the other thing, too. People who are learning about the history of college football, man, I got to tell you now, those Pittsburgh teams in the mid-70s, those things were dynamite all the way into the early 80s. You know that. I mean, that's when that place was in its golden age of football. And as you just told us, for a group that almost wanted to shut it down, that's a pretty daggone good strong return to the game, wasn't it?
Oh, it's the greatest turnaround ever. And there's some rules in the defunct or soon to be defunct NCAA. One was our first year there in 1973, we recruited 76 players. We signed 76 players. So the next year, that's when we came out, or the NCAA came out with the 30 limit. You could only sign 30 players, then they went down to 25, but the administration and Coach Majors, and just think how many ADs or how many presidents would let anybody sign 76 players. So they, in their minds, they were determined that they were going to give it one more shot.
Jackie, I want to go back, since you're heading to Knoxville. 1980, you look across the field, bringing in a really talented team, but you didn't have Dan Marino that day, and you see Johnny Majors on the other sideline. Again, this is going to be a special weekend coming up, but what about that 1980 game? You had to have some mixed emotions seeing Johnny across the way, didn't you?
Absolutely. But, Pack, you know I always say some funny things. They asked me about that during the week. Everybody wanted to know, well, here's the son or the assistant playing, the head coach. And I said, if Coach Majors and I were playing, there wouldn't be anybody in the stands. And so I said, we ain't playing. There's 100,000 people. But, the feeling was good. But our relationship was very, very good. And it was kind of like, I don't know if I thought about it as, like people may have thought, well, I got to go beat – my father, or I got to go beat. It was a game that we played. And even before the game, on Friday, Coach and I got together. I mean, we visited and, the respect that we had both ways. But the sad stories to it, as you know, Tennessee was always one of the loudest stadiums ever. And there was a couple of reasons for that. One is they lined the field, both sides, with PV speakers. Those are the rock band speakers. The microphones, there's a lot of them, were in the band section. And if you really think about it, how can you hear Rocky Top over 100,000 people holler? You can't. So they put speakers in the band and mics and speakers on the field, but on the visitor side, the speakers were facing the field, so you couldn't hear yourself talk. Right. And on the other side, the home field, they were facing the stands. So before the game, I gave our security guys that traveled with us, Ray Goger and Johnny Parker, deputy sheriffs, I said, go cut the speaker wires. And they did. And they fixed them. And then right before kickoff, they cut them again. So we didn't have the speaker wires. Hey, so
I want to ask you about Pat Narduzzi and the Pitt team. In some ways, and I've joked with him about this. In fact, I did last Friday. He's got a bit of a defensive-driven, grind-it, calculated percentage passing game. I mean, Mark Whipple's got a lot of NFL influence to him. This is kind of the Pittsburgh team, I think, that you and Johnny Majors would like, Coach.
Yes. Pat grew up in Ohio. You called the valley there Eastern Ohio, Western Pennsylvania, because they were all lined with steel mills. So he grew up in the old steel mill mentality of very tough workers. And his dad was a coach. And so, yes, he is a defensive-oriented, and that's how he got the job, because at Michigan State, his defenses were outstanding. Mm-hmm. So, but, looking at this game, it's gonna be a game that either team could win because they're so close. The guys in Vegas are a lot smarter than we are. So when they put it a one-point game or pick'em game, it should be a good game.
By the way, as an honorary captain, what kind of perks you getting this weekend?
Well, I get to take my grandson, which is really outstanding. He lives in Nashville. So I'll pick him up, go over Friday night. And, they have a dinner for some alumni on Friday night. They're going to go out on the boat on the river. As anybody knows, if you go to Knoxville, one of the sites that you want to go see is all the boats parked on the river before the game. And so I get to see some of my former players, because quite a few of them are going to be there. And one, Jimbo Colbert and his wife will be there. So, get to see him.
Well, I got to tell you, the one thing I did last week in getting ready for Pittsburgh's opener, Coach, was look back at just kind of the players that played at the University of Pittsburgh in the era of you and Coach Majors. And when you're in their facility building, you can't help but look at that era. And I would think that you'd be a pretty good coach with Jimbo Covert and Hugh Green and Matt Cavanaugh, Dan Marino, Tony Dorsett. I mean, you could figure out a way to win a few games. You know, throw Julius Dawkins in there if you want to, wide receiver. Big John Brown at tight end. He's a marvelous player. I mean, you had a few guys that could go get it now.
Well, you know, they're the backup players that we had 1 year, 1980, was Chris Dolman, which is in the Pro Football and College Football Hall of Fame, and quite a few other guys that played in the NFL and were all pros. So, you know, from top to bottom, that team had a lot of players. And, you know, it would have been a exit in a hurry today if it was in the transfer portal time.
Hey, before we let you go, what do you think is going to happen with this NCAA the SEC with Oklahoma and Texas? Where do you think we're headed, big picture?
Well, I don't have enough time, but, you know, everybody's throwing darts and throwing arrows at the SEC. The Big Ten was the first one to start the expansion. And this is years ago, Pac. And the reason for it, that the Big Ten was shut off at the Ohio-Pennsylvania border. They did not have Pennsylvania, New York, New Jersey. They did not have the New York market. So you're in this world, so you understand markets. So they went and got Penn State because Penn State would give them Pennsylvania, New Jersey, and New York in the New York market. So fast forward, and why did, of all reasons, why did the Big Ten go get Rutgers? There's no reason in anybody's mind that Rutgers fits any team in the Big Ten football-wise. The reason they do it, the number one fan base in New York City is Rutgers. So they went and got Rutgers. So all these darts being thrown at the SEC, I'm not saying that Stanky and go all the way back to when the Big in the SEC expanded years ago with Roy Kramer, that they're smarter. But I think they have a partner, which is the ESPN, and competing against Fox, competing against CBS, and especially Fox. I think ESPN may be a little smarter right now. So that's my opinion. Now, we could go in this forever, but it's called eyeballs, and it's called market, and who has the market gets the sponsors, and who has the sponsors gets paid the most money.
Yep. Basic elements of it haven't changed much, Coach.
No, but here's, well, I'll say one thing. If you take the Pac-12, the Pac-12 will never change. And people think that we'll change commissioners, we'll do this, and we'll get all those eyeballs up. And it's not going to happen because only 14 to 17% of the whole Pac-10 area are college football fans. They're not turning on the TV. They're not filling the stadiums. So, you know, we keep saying it's the SEC or it's called economics.
Follow the money. Jackie, listen, congratulations on the weekend coming up. I know you're going to have a blast. Being able to enjoy it with family makes it even that much better. And always appreciate your time and your friendship.
Well, thank you, Pack. And you guys, what game do you have this week?
I'm doing Florida State. I got Jacksonville State at Florida State. I'll be interested to see how Florida State continues to build the momentum with Coach Norvell, to be honest with you, Coach.
I think he will.
Yeah.
He's got some toughness inside.
Hey, Jackie, I got every game because my big fat butt's going to be on the couch watching every one of them.
Hey, now, you know, I don't drink that brown water, but I drink clear water.
Oh boy. All right.
Speak my language.
See you, Coach. Right. Be well.
Okay.
Thanks.
All right.
Thanks, there you have it. Oh man. By the way, Jackie Sherrill ended up at the University of Pittsburgh going 59-1 and went 4-1 in bowls from 1977 to 1981. Pretty good.
You can coach them up now.
Oh, I'll tell you what.
No doubt about it.
That program, if you go to their facility, and there's this one room now that they have where they have every one of the trophies, any one of the trophies in major college football, Heisman, O'Brien, Biletnikoff, you name it, right? Outland, Lombardi, da-da. They got a winner for all of them. They got a winner for all of them, Coach.
Well, we just went to the whole Hall of Fame, you know, in terms of ACC relationships and so forth in Pittsburgh. Now, I'm telling you, when you put your all-time team together,
ooh,
that crowd from Pitt, now, ooh, they're going to line up and play all of you.
I mean, there's a wall up there.
You know
it's just like crazy. And he just told you who the backups were.
Right. Chris Dolman.
Man, how about that?
You know what else they got up there that's strong?
Rib Fest. Yeah, I heard. Yeah, thanks.
Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Packer and Durham. Final segment of a fun show. I always love talking to Jackie Sherrill. Roddy Jones. You have to talk your partner off the ledge a little bit there. Now he was
who? Roddy?
Yeah,
he'll be fine.
Yeah, you better be. It's good be time fine. On Saturday.
We'll play now. 8 o'clock prime time. We'll be all
just
right.
Keep the Georgia Tech score away from him.
Got noon. The game's at noon. He can watch the game and then get to.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. Might want to keep the score away from him.
I hear you. All right, you ready?
I am. Let's
okay.
do it.
Okay. The votes are in on wide receiver U,
and our first winner of the year is.
With a commanding 32%, nearly a third of the vote, Boston College tight end Trey Berry is
hurdle.
This week's winner, yes, of wide receiver U at 32 and change. Here it is. Not as much the catch as it is the big man doing that. Still pretty impressive.
I think, you know what? I'm good with that a winner.
Okay.
Trey, by the way, you will win an assortment of great gifts and prizes as soon as we find out what we can afford to give to you, legally.
A lot of name, image, and likeness stuff coming your way. Second place, Rashawn Henry, Virginia, the nice catch in the corner.
That was good.
He got 27%, so it was relatively close. Ja'Cory Roberson, 20%. Deuce Chestnut, the one-hand pick, 19%.
All right. But so Trey wins the first one of the year. Again, all you ACC fans, when you're watching games, if you're going to a stadium,
that's it.
You have as much input of this as anybody else. You see a great catch, offense, defense, doesn't matter. It could be a great pick, whatever.
Yep.
Nominate them. And we put them together, and then hopefully you vote, and we got a winner. Every single week, wide receiver U.
All right. Now, sidebar to the wide receiver U. We heard you, NC State fans. We know about Emeka Emezi's catch. I got you. We heard you. I'm sure he'll be there before we're done.
Emeka, every week Emeka's on the list.
Well, that's – I mean, I understand. We heard you. John
– Wait. You heard him, so what'd you do about it?
Well, they didn't make the cut for the finalists this week.
It happens.
Yeah.
I mean,
how many times did we have eight last year where we had to pair it to four and we were stuck on six?
There were multiple times last year that I actually thought the winner
– Was left off.
Was left off.
That's
and just
it.
Went, hey, we'll go with whatever the fans vote on here.
Right.
We're just kind of leading the parade.
All right. So
– Emeka will be back on
that's
there.
That's it. Stay and remember, healthy. Submit – your wide receiver, you, to
right.
Packer and Durham. All right, fan accounting. More fan accounting.
And a bunch of them.
John Clater is first. John's got Clemson first, State second, Virginia Tech third, Pitt four, Virginia five, BC, Wake, and then he goes Florida State, Miami, Syracuse, North Carolina 11. A little strong, John. Louisville, Georgia Tech, Duke, round it out.
Yeah, UNC at 11 spots. Interesting. But, hey, it's your opinion.
All right. Stephen Willis. Stephen has 16 teams.
Oh, Sweet 16 is back.
Yes, Stephen.
Let's see it.
Stephen has gone Sweet 16 for us. All right. What are we doing, Stephen? Where is it? Come on.
See, I'm interested now.
No, we're going to hold it till tomorrow?
You can't.
Apparently, here's J.C. Bobbitt. Clemson 1,
State
2. What
happened to the Sweet 16 guy?
Virginia 3. Or Virginia 4, Virginia Tech 3, Florida State, Pitt,
wait a minute.
BC, Miami, Carolina 10, and J.C. Bobbitt, Syracuse, Louisville, Duke, Georgia Tech.
You teased me with the Sweet 16.
We're moving fast. It's a fast-moving show.
Yeah, we got time for J.C. Bobbitt. Where's my Sweet 16 guy?
Tomorrow, Sweet 16.
Tomorrow?
Stephen Willis.
We might not even be here tomorrow.
Stephen, you will be front and center tomorrow, as Pack likes to say.
Come on.
Along with Jasir Taylor of Wake Forest. He of the kick return for touchdown the other night against Old Dominion.
Strong.
Tune into Packer and Durham weekday mornings from 7 to 10 Eastern for the best conversations about everything from the ACC. Find it on the ACC Network, SiriusXM Channel 371, and streaming on the ESPN app.